Hi, it's Diane. Merry Christmas, everybody. I met my best friend, Jane Holmes Dixon, more than 40 years ago. We were both homemakers and active in our church. Jane went on to become a bishop in the Episcopal Church, while I became a nationally syndicated talk radio host. Through it all, we talked every day. Jane passed away suddenly on Christmas Day in 2012. So this is a time of year I really feel her absence. In 2002, on the eve of Jane's retirement from the church, I invited her to come on to the Diane Rehm Show. We talked about our friendship, how it had sustained us through the ups and downs, and about how our relationship to each other changed over the decades. Good morning, my dear Jane. It's so good to have you.
Good morning, my dear Diane. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, combining, we should say, poor thing, you've got a cold, and you're sounding not quite your full voice, but you're going to be fine, right?
I'm going to be fine. I may not sound quite as Southern as I normally do.
Combining a discussion about career and friendship seems such a natural thing for you and me to do, since we both began our careers at about the same time. As I recall, we had both taken Feminism 101 at GW.
Well, I took the course because you recommended it. You preceded me in that. Expanding New Horizons for Women, I believe, was the actual name of the course. You took it and said to me, this is something that's important, and so I did.
And both of us had been homemakers for a number of years. The friendship actually began at St. Patrick's Church here in Washington, where as homemakers, as mothers, we really got involved in the activity of the church, and you were teaching Sunday school.
That's correct. And being at St. Patrick's Church here in Washington, in the Diocese of Washington, was really life transforming for me. Making friends of a lifetime, you're being one of my closest and dearest friends, as well as expanding my understanding of the gospel and what ministry is really all about.
You know, I so will remember the day you called me on the telephone and you said, Ms. Rehm, I'm sort of embarrassed to say this, but here's what I really want to do with my life. I want to become a priest. I'll never forget that. What do you think it was that called you to the priesthood?
In the Episcopal Church, we say in our ordination vows that we believe God and the church are calling. I hope and pray that God has called me to this ministry that has been so incredible. But the church clearly did that in terms of being confronted by a woman who has long been a mentor of mine about the priesthood, then going through what we call the process, where lay folk, clergy, and finally the bishop says, yes, we believe you have a call to the bishop. I mean, to the priesthood. So I think that it was a combination of the church and I pray God. And for me, the church is made up of human beings.
Of course, when you were ordained to the priesthood, there were very, very few women accompanying you. How many women were at Virginia then?
In my class, Diane, when I entered in 1977, out of a class of 40, there were 10 of us, so it was about a fourth. So it was more, we were not all on the ordination track at that. And now women make up at least half of the class.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's remarkable.
But there were real hurdles to be overcome.
The hurdle that has been the one that really sort of impacted my life was finding my first call. Bishop Walker was going to ordain me.
Bishop John Walker.
Bishop John T. Walker, the sixth bishop of Washington, was going to ordain me to the diaconate in June of 1981. His policy was that he didn't ordain you unless you had what we called a cure, which was a position within the church that paid a stipend. I can't remember whether it was 16 or 18 job interviews to find that first call. That hurdle was enormous.
Mm. And was there openness to the idea of taking a woman into a church then?
The churches in the Diocese of Washington, which I would like to say are the District of Columbia and four counties in Maryland, Montgomery, Prince George, Charles, and St. Mary's, the churches in Washington in 1981 that were going to consider a woman had pretty well filled those assistant positions. And so I went to the Diocese of Virginia, which was a little later in taking women. There was no what we call upward movement. Women were taken, were being to take as assistants, but they were not called to being a rector or the head pastor in a congregation.
They had to be assistants.
That's right.
Well, and in a sense, I mean, that provided a good training program for you, provided you had a good person to work with who was willing to take you and teach you and help you.
There's no question about that. I had 3 years with, who is now the Suffragan Bishop of Virginia, the Right Reverend David Jones at the Church of the Good Shepherd, a very large parish in suburban Virginia. And then I came to Washington to spend 2 years with the Reverend Frank Wade, the rector of St. Albans Church. I had 5 years as an associate. That was very important for me, just as you said, to help me learn to be a deacon, to be a priest, and how to lead a congregation.
And then you did finally get your own congregation, St. Philip's in Laurel.
Correct, in 1986.
And how long were you there?
I was there 6 years.
Well, then came this extraordinary day on which you were elected the suffragan bishop of the Diocese of Washington. This was 1992, and there were those of us, your friends, your supporters, who were up in the balcony that day, absolutely out of our minds, cheering so loudly for our dear friend, Jane Dixon. What was that day like for you?
What I remember most about that day is the fact that a diocese, a group of people, a diocese is people, people who knew me, clergy and lay, were willing to call me to this incredible work, people that I'd had the privilege of working with. And then, as you say, to see people who were dear to my life, the five women, four of you up in that balcony with whom we started at St. Patrick's, to be surrounded by my family, my husband and my three children. My daughter-in-law, I had one daughter-in-law at the time. It was sort of like pinching myself to believe that it really happened, that the church would take that kind of a risk, because it seems much more the norm now, but in 1992 it was not.
And you became the second woman bishop in this country, the third in the whole Anglican Church, out of how many bishops in this country?
In this country, there are probably about 260 bishops.
And there you were, the second woman. Extraordinary. And then with the retirement of Bishop Ronald Haynes, you stepped into the leadership role of Bishop Pro Tempore. You've had quite a year and dealing with a number of extremely important issues. What do you see as your most important accomplishment?
People have asked me that a lot in the last few months, Diane, and I think about it a lot. I can't single out one most important accomplishment, if you'll let me talk about a few.
Good.
Obviously, I had the privilege to guard the faith, unity, and discipline of the church when I was consecrated a bishop on November the 19th in 92. I know I really didn't understand what that meant, that would be part of my vow. And I certainly didn't seek out an opportunity to do it, but it presented itself to me. And so I had that privilege of defending and protecting the church.
How?
A congregation in this diocese decided to call a priest who was not willing to give me the guarantees that he would indeed live into his ordination vows and to live by the canons of the church. The only analogy I can really say about what it means to be a priest in the Episcopal Church is if one has ever been in the military. Where in the military, one voluntarily, if one is not drafted, gives up a great deal of one's autonomy to the Constitution and one's superiors. When one is ordained to the diaconate and the priesthood in the Episcopal Church, you promise to obey your bishop. The man that was called would not give me that guarantee. The other part of that that was very important to understand is there are 250 priests in the Diocese of Washington who are canonically resident. Those 250 men and women live by their ordination vows. Don't always agree with the bishop. None of us ever have. I had disagreements with both Bishop Walker, Bishop Haynes. But the fact was I'd taken a vow. And the priests do that in this diocese. So I couldn't have one set of rules for a man who would not guarantee that he would live by the promises.
And now a quick break. When we return, more of my 2002 interview with my dearest friend, Jane Holmes Dixon.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here is the rest of my conversation with the late Bishop Jane Holmes Dixon.
I said that this conversation was going to be two-pronged. It's as much about friendship as it is about her career and what's ahead. So I just want to say to you, Jane, it seems to me you and I have been so fortunate to have each other throughout these years, these 35 years, moving from the home into, for you, school, for me, volunteer workplace, and finally to the positions we now hold. How important has that friendship been to you?
Beyond the telling. You have been the one that I could always come to with the struggles and the joys about what it's meant to move, as you say, from the home to school to an incredible ministry within the church, a ministry that has a very public face, as yours does. I never had to translate with you. When I called you, you knew what I was talking about.
And we talked to each other each morning at 7 o'clock. People are always shocked when they hear that statement. But we've been doing that pretty regularly for the past 30 years.
Absolutely. And as we've said publicly before, when we don't, both our husbands wonder what's going on when we haven't heard from the other. But it's a touchstone for me to know that you're there, that your support is there. You tell me the truth, which I appreciate. I think one of the things we find often is we are in these positions of authority that people are somehow afraid to tell us the truth, that there'll be repercussions. And so I value that enormously.
And for my part, I think our listeners by now are pretty familiar with the fact that several years ago, I began having serious problems with my voice and was finally, I finally decided to go off the air for several months in frustration because I really couldn't talk. And you were one of the people I allowed to come and visit me because I just couldn't talk on the phone. I was scared for people to hear my voice. And one day you said, would you like us to do a healing service for you? And you and Bishop Ronald Haynes took me into that gorgeous little chapel there at Church House at the cathedral and performed a service of healing. You know, I can still see that chapel and that stained glass window and just sitting there with you. I think people who don't have the kind of friendship or the kind of support that they can count on in any circumstance are less fortunate than we. I'll put it another way. I would wish for everyone that they could have that kind of relationship. And like any relationship, it's had its ups and downs.
Well, it's very theological for me, coming from the world in which I come. I believe that God created us to be in relationship with God and with one another. And one of the great joys of my life, indeed, are relationships and friendships, because those are the relationships, in many ways, we get to choose. And you and I chose each other. We met each other as young women. I know I certainly never dreamed that I would be doing what I'm doing now, and I don't think you did. You did either. But we formed a bond that has lasted, and it's a relationship that indeed, you know, changes my life. I use that word a lot, life transforming, but that's a large part of what I believe the gospel is about. And like you, I would wish for every human being to have one or more relationships that really have that kind of stick-to-itness, that kind of loyalty, kind of honesty, and the ability to laugh together.
I think that's such an important point, that ability to laugh together. We've laughed at ourselves. We've laughed at each other. We've shared our family stories. Our kids laugh at us. You've married my two children. You've been with us as a family for all these years. It's really remarkable. And now, dear Jane, you're looking forward. You're about to leave the active ministry. What's that going to mean for you? What's it going to mean for us?
I thought a lot about what it's going to mean for the two of us, because I'm not sure I'm going to get up that early every morning anymore. So we may have to change our time of talking, which we did almost 30 years ago when I went to seminary. So we're going to have to sort that out about how we are going to be together with your continuing to have your show and your hours that you do. But one of the things that I count on between the two of us is that we're going to continue getting old together. As you say, we know each other's stories and we tell stories in our family. You know, my children well remember the night that my mother died. I had pneumonia and I had to go to the hospital to get some medication to be able to go to Mississippi. You called my children, and I'd called to tell you that. You called my children to tell them that you were there, that you would be there for them, but they'd better behave and be wonderful to me. When we tell family stories, they still laugh about that. So I don't have any doubt that our friendship is going to have to change, as my life is going to change in the future. But Diane, I need to tell you something. I'm really excited about the future. God has blessed me with energy, with excitement, and with a love of opportunity and newness. I don't know exactly what it's going to mean yet, but I'm trying to talk to people. I'm open. I want to take out into the world my concern and belief in justice. That's very, very important to me. And there are three areas that I'm particularly concerned about. Justice for, continuing justice for women in the world. You and I have said we had the privilege of being stay-at-home moms for a while until our children were older. And by the time we really began our careers, they were in places where they didn't need us so much in those formative years. That's not true for my daughter, for my two daughters-in-law. For your Jenny. for Nancy, David's wife. How are women going to sort those things out? How are systems going to change to support women in their life, both as if they choose to be wives, mothers, professionals? The other two areas that I'm really concerned about is the life of our business communities. How justice is done at the corporate level, what it means to be a stockholder in a company now, how that affects the economy, as well as continuing issues of acceptance of all people. I do believe with all my heart and soul that God created each and every human being in God's image. And so to find ways for the world to say that in this wonderful global world in which we now live.
Jane, you've carved out the world for yourself. I think that sounds so exciting. And to not now be pinned down to any one thing, but to find yourself considering numerous ideas, possibilities, you're right, that's very exciting. As we, you know, it used to be that women of our age, I am 65, you're about to be...
Next Wednesday, I will indeed be 65.
65. 30 years ago, I mean, women of our age would be out of it. I mean, that's all there is to it. And you and I have had the good fortune to be in an age that accepts older people, women and men, as people who can continue to offer and contribute to society. And with your wonderful background and experience, I think the areas you're looking at are just perfect. There are an awful lot of people waiting on the phone. Shall we take some calls? Let's go first to Dan in Tyler, Texas. Hi there, Dan.
Good morning, Diane.
How are you?
Fine.
Good.
Diane, I'm excited about women moving into ministry, and I was just wondering what your friend thinks are some of the unique gifts or perspectives that women bring to the clergy.
What do you think, Jane?
One of the things that I have found in these years as an ordained person that women bring is the understanding that we do not have to have all of the gifts in ourselves, all of the skills, all of the talents, and that we can band together to form a team, if you will, to make things happen. I'm very good at public speaking. I'm very good at strategy. There are other things that I don't do quite so well, but there are other people who can do those things, men or women. And that we can work together to make things happen, and you don't have to have it all in that one person.
Did you feel like a pioneer?
People tell me that, so I guess I do. I haven't thought about it truly. I'm not trying to be coy in day-to-day work because the work was there and I did it. But when I stand back and getting to this perspective, I suppose you could say I was.
But you just have to do it. I mean, as you say, you're presented with a position, you don't sort of think, gosh, am I the first? Am I the second? Am I a pioneer? I just have to do my job.
Right.
And that's exactly what you did. Dan, it's good to hear from you again. Take care.
Thank you.
And thanks for calling. And let's go to Plymouth, New Hampshire. Good morning, Teresa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for taking my call and for doing this particular show. I'm an Episcopal priest in New Hampshire. It's a great privilege to speak with Bishop Dixon. And you may or may not know that we're in the process here of just beginning our search for our next bishop. So I'm wondering, as you leave the episcopate, what question you would ask somebody who's considering entering the episcopate?
Well, good morning, Teresa. It's nice to talk to another sister. I would really want to know a question that may sound sort of strange, but one that's been very important for me. How much energy does that person have? I think that to be, I'm sure you know as a priest in the church, that having stamina and energy is really, really important. I mean, of course, the first question is, what does that person believe about the God who created us in God's image and as Christians in his son, Jesus Christ, whom we know through the power of the Spirit? You want to know what one's faith perspectives are and how that person not only talks about what he or she believes, but how that person has lived it.
Right.
I mean, that's obviously the first question to know.
Right.
The second one is how much energy does a person have to give to it, and what kind of support will they have from their community? All clergy are not married, as you know, which is certainly not a requisite for that. But is there support from those closest to that person to do the job? It makes an enormous difference.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's go to Joan in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Good morning.
Hi, Diane and Reverend Dixon. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I know your friendship is a blessing to each of you.
Indeed.
And I wonder about your husband's reactions to it, especially at the beginning and in light of your frequent phone calls. I especially wonder, were they jealous of the intimacy between you? Men don't often have the same type of relationship that women have, and I wonder how they responded both at the beginning and through the years.
Well, I can tell you that my husband, who does not have a great many friends, seemed almost envious of our friendship. Not envious in any active way, but, you know, sort of wistful and enjoying it. I mean, when Ms. Dixon would call, John would say, well, what'd Ms. Dixon say this morning? Or, so what'd you all talk about today? Or something like that. Always, though, supportive and loving. Jane?
I think my husband, like John Rehm, was interested. I'm not so sure he was wistful, but I think he was interested. He had not ever experienced a friendship of this kind of consistency, these calls. He may have been a little jealous in the beginning, but what he came to realize soon after was that I was different because of it. I was better for him. I was better for the children because of that. And so, as Diane has said, if we're not talking on a regular basis, he knows that I'm not in a very good place. And that affects him. So he's come to treasure it. And like John Rehm, he wants to know what we've talked about. And I've noticed that quite often when we're on the phone, he sort of stops and I hear him listening.
So I think, Joan, in answer to your question more directly, it really has been wonderful for all of us, including, as I said earlier, even the children, because, I mean, they all talk about Ms. Dixon, or Jane's kids talk about Ms. Rehm, and they all tell stories. Several months ago, when Jane's son, Edward, came to visit, he took me by the cheek, you know, and he said, hello, Ms. Rehm, as though I were the child and he were the adult, sort of reversing our roles. I mean, just darling. You know, that's all I can say, Joan.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for calling. You know, I guess there might be some men out there who would feel threatened by the constant conversation or say, you know, what in the world do you all talk about? But there's always something to talk about. Let's go to Silver Spring, Maryland. Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. Jane, this is unbelievable. Our paths crossed back in 1987 in Florida, where I met you and Dixie. And I have been so moved to watch you and your ministry on TV through national celebrations and memorials, etc. And I have wanted to touch base with you while I'm in the area. And I was in the car, and I heard this, you know, I heard you, and I just thought, God has given me a way to touch base.
Oh, how wonderful.
Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, and I'm just so glad that we met at a time, I think, for both of us where we really made some changes in our lives. And I'm well. I'm in the ministry through counseling, pastoral counseling, and using my music. And I just wish you the best.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to hear from you, and I wish you the best as well.
it's a miracle, and I'm just grateful for it. And I wish you well and care for you very much.
Well, thank you. I hope you'll get in touch. I'd love to hear from you.
That's great. Thanks for calling. You know, Peggy mentioned some of those very, very public services you've conducted from the cathedral, one shortly after September 11th, with the president, the cabinet, everyone there. Talk about that experience.
Well, as you can imagine, Diane, it was a momentous time. I sent a fax to the president's office the afternoon of September the 11th, letting him know that if he wished to have a prayer service at the cathedral, we would be honored to do so. And indeed he did. And the dean and the staff of the cathedral put that service together in such a short time. It was really quite amazing what they were able to do. But to stand there knowing that all those people had gathered and that it was being looked at around the world, and to have, I keep using the word privilege, but that's what I feel about my life, the privilege of saying that I believe that love is stronger than hate and that ultimately love lived out as justice will prevail. It was important for me to say to myself in that time when our country was in terror, things had been uprooted, lives had been lost. And so it was important to gather, to pray together, people of many faiths, which again, our cathedral can welcome. It is a house of prayer for all people. And so to be the one who was, in essence, leading that service as the bishop during that time was a privilege and an honor. And I hope and pray for many people, an opportunity for people to know that love is stronger than hate.
Do you know, even as you repeat those words here now, I can still see you saying those words on that day at the cathedral. And I find myself thinking, there you were, standing in the pulpit at National Cathedral, speaking to this extraordinary gathering of top U.S. and world leaders. Were you thinking at all, I'm going to pinch myself. Here I am, a young woman who started out in Winona, Mississippi, and here I stand.
There are two things that really answered that question, for your question for me. I spent a fair amount of time in prayer before I went over to do that. It was important for me to know what I was going to say. It was important for me to do it without notes, to speak. And so I prayed that God would give me that which I needed to be able to do that. The pinching myself came when I met Billy Graham back in the room, which we call the slight, before the service. As a young woman, about 15 years old, living in Mississippi, I had gone to Memphis on Dr. Graham was having one of his crusades. He was at the beginning, almost the height of his ministry as an evangelist. And I had made a public witness. I was grew up in the Presbyterian Church. I had come forward for what they call an altar call to pledge myself once again to God. Well, of course, Billy Graham didn't know me at all. But sitting back there talking with him, I had the opportunity to tell him
that
he didn't know me. And it was quite wonderful. He looked at me and he said, well, you know, I've had a lot of people tell me about the impact I've had on their life, but I've never had anybody tell me that they've become a bishop.
Oh, how wonderful.
And at the end of the service, as you know, Dr. Graham is now quite fragile.
Yes.
He was incredible that day as he stood in the pulpit. But after the service, we were standing there, and I had been sitting by him to watch him to be sure that he was all right. And so I said to him, Dr. Graham, may I give you a hug? And he put his arms around me, and he said, you can be my bishop anytime.
Oh.
So as you say, to pinch myself,
yeah.
It was really sort of a full circle of a beginning of a young woman making an affirmation of faith in a very public way to have this opportunity to be with that man.
What a story to share with our listeners. That's just beautiful. Jane, before this program ends, I need to tell you how much I've learned from you, For example, I think I have learned to think in more sensitive ways about other people and their needs. I've watched you in so many situations use absolutely unfailing diplomacy and care, even when I knew you were angry or hurt. I was there one day when a priest would not allow you into his church. And I watched your grace and the continuing strong posture, but never angry or defiant. And I really have learned from you in that way. And I've seen you reach out to care for other people in ways that taught me to glean what other people need. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, you are welcome. And I likewise have learned from you. So much of what I do as a priest and as a bishop is to listen to people and to ask them questions that elicit their ability to talk about what's in their heart and their mind. And you've taught me to a degree to do that. You're the best interviewer in the entire world. There's no question about that. I was at a dinner party last night and we were discussing that. You are indeed. But you don't go at people in a hostile way. I've never heard you be hostile on this show. People are not afraid to come on this show, and that's true in our relationship. But you care enough about people that you want to know about them, and so you help them to have the opportunity to express what it is they want to say. And in the work that I do, without that, I couldn't do the work. And I've learned that. I've really learned that from you. It's been a great gift to me, as well as the fact of the gift of knowing that when we disagree, which we have and will again, and sometimes they've been very painful disagreements, that I know now that you're not going to leave me. And loyalty, fidelity, and trust, Diane, are the bedrock for me. And I know that you're there for me.
I do love you so much.
And I love you so much.
Now, tell me whether you have any apprehension whatsoever about retirement.
Of course I have apprehension about retirement. I have had a busy, demanding, exciting life. And these days, I don't have the appointments that I did because I'm phasing my life out. I leave next week. I formally retire the end of August. And so, of course, I have apprehensions about what's coming next. But I believe that hope is the dynamic of the Christian faith. And so I'm hopeful.
The Right Reverend Jane Holmes Dixon. She is suffragan bishop of the Diocese of Washington and one of my very dearest friends. Jane, we all wish you great success.
Thank you, my dear. And
safe journey.
Thank you.
And to all of our listeners, thank you. I'm Diane Rehm. The interview you just heard was originally broadcast July 18th, 2002. A postscript. Jane and I always thought we'd continue to get old together. We both looked forward to sitting in a rocking chair and telling each other stories. She was still very active at the end of her life. She had just had a Christmas Eve celebration for her family on December 24th, 2014, just 1 month after my husband had moved into assisted living. She had cooked. She loved to cook for her family. It was a great celebration. And at the end of it, she was tired. At 9:30 that evening, She told her husband, David Dixon, we all call him Dixie, that she was very tired and she went to bed. Two of her grandchildren were staying overnight to open presents and celebrate Christmas the next day. Instead, when Dixie awoke the next morning and tried to waken Jane, there was no response. Jane, without a sound and apparently without struggle, had peacefully slipped the bonds of this world into the next. I miss Jane. I miss our daily conversations, our laughter, our friendship. She was such an important person in my life, and as you've heard, her message that love is stronger than hate, her words are so important today. I leave each of you with a wish that in your own life you find a friend like Jane. And that's all for today. We'll be back with another special broadcast from the archives on December 31st. Our first new episode of 2020 will be on Tuesday, January 7th. Until then, I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email to drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music was composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineer this week was Natalie Yurev-Libker. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.